When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a episode of JKL Media, where we are getting off the sci-fi train, but we are staying on the fandom train, music, and we are talking The Greatest Night of Pop, a new documentary that was released via Netflix in 2024, discussing behind-the-scenes data of recording We Are the World. I will tell you that one of my minor nitpicks of Bruce Springsteen's biography is he did not discuss this night whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And I would have been like, hey, Bruce, like you were there. You should have told us stuff. Right. And so I was very happy to see that he was one of the people interviewed in this. And another one, because I just had two people on Set Lusting Bruce where we discussed them working to get Cyndi Lauper in the Music Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So it was really good to see her being interviewed. And so we're going to talk about this documentary. I loved it. I had such good memories of this video and this song. Karen, let's start off with you. Quick thoughts.
Yeah, it was a huge part of my life during that time. I remember my friends and I were so excited to hear it in the simulcast. I guess it had been out, a couple weeks when that happened. And it led into stuff like Live Aid and Farm Aid. And those were things that were big for me as well. Joining up with my friends and watching Live Aid live, or as much of it as we could at the time. Hey, let's get together Tuesday night and Thursday night and we'll watch Live Aid. It was just a huge deal. And we made a trip and we bought three or four copies of the single because we so desperately wanted to help And you can see that they had that impact on the world. And I think it's something we're missing nowadays.
Lou, how about you?
Yeah, this is very much a time capsule of a era that we've lost with the advent of digital communications and the internet. And it just was a reminder of how organic things, much more organic things back were in the day were. This is on like 1985. Doesn't really seem that long ago to people of my age. I know it's 40 years ago, but I'm still going, that doesn't seem that long ago. And it's just, you just take things for granted today that we, like us doing this podcast, it's impossible without the digital stuff. So there's definitely benefits to having it. But watching them try to assemble this project without messaging or email or anything like that, it was a stark reminder of how different things back were then. And for me, it invoked the whole Bob Geldof effort with Live Aid and their song, "We Let Them Know,
It's Christmas.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm from Canada. Tears Are Not Enough, which was a Canadian thing. And there's been other countries that I hadn't even realized had done it, Spain and whatnot. It was a very different era. And it's just so organic. It's just, you wonder how they pulled it off, how they pulled things off like this before the advent of the internet and emails and instant messaging. So it was definitely poignant. And it's a real time capsule. And just looking at how young everybody is in these videos and the people that are no longer with us. So yeah, there's a very heady mix of different emotions while watching something like this.
Yeah, I remember when this came out, loving the video, loving all the actual song. I think there's a lot of people that would say that Do They Know It's Christmas is a better song, and I won't argue that fact. I think that's a great song. This is, I think, very of its time, the 80s. But one of the things I'd love y'all's opinion on, and we'll get to some of the details of the documentary, but it's interesting that they record the chorus first and then they do the solos. And I would maybe argue, no offense to Kim Carnes, but everyone else who has a solo, really a significant long-term career, right? Maybe James Ingram a little, but not really. Him and Al Jarreau both had a lot of souls and rhythm and blues, and Kim Carnes was successful, but a truly, to use the sports analogy, right, a powerhouse lineup of one star after another singing. So,
well, at the time, Kim Carnes was pretty big.
Oh, so. Yeah, absolutely. And their voices, I thought, how interesting that they're like, okay, I've got to figure out who, when I go from what to what. One of the things, I went, not this past birthday, but their birthday before, we went up to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and there was the Dylan Museum and the Woody Guthrie Museum are right next to each other. And the Woody Guthrie Museum had an exhibit about Springsteen Live. That's why we went there. And there was a little kiosk where Bruce talks about doing encores. And there was you could pick the decade, and then there were five different shows from each decade. And then they showed you the set list, and then they gave you a choice of 10 songs that you pick for the encore. You pick them, then it showed you what he actually did. And one of the things in his tape, of course, is when you're doing an encore, you need to go, okay, I'm doing this song and it's going to end in this key. So the next song needs to be a similar key so that when I'm trolling, this is the thing. And having to do that, I thought was pretty interesting. What is there anything specifically that stood out from this document that you really were impressed with, Karen?
There were things that stood out. I do like how they made the lineup, like putting Dionne Warwick with Willie Nelson.
Yeah.
Putting Bruce Springsteen right before Kenny Loggins was an interesting choice as well. And the late substitution of Huey Lewis, which he's one of my favorite.
Yeah.
I know he's underrated and other people would disagree with me, but I actually saw part of This Is It being filmed, the video.
Okay.
It was on Santa Cruz Beach and Boardwalk. And we're there in the sand and their heads are...
Yeah.
Anyway, he's just one of my favorite dudes. And to see him not only interviewed, but to see what he did with Kim Carnes and Cyndi Lauper, it was great. I loved the interaction. One of the things that stood out for me was I was surprised at who was, and I hesitate to say this, but troublemakers, not in the fact that they made trouble per se, but they were problematic on the night. And Al Jarreau being one of them, it made me tilt my head. I thought that was funny that he drank a lot that night. And then seeing Bob Dylan flounder and Stevie Wonder had to come and sing as Bob Dylan in order to like give him how he was going to sing it. He just seemed so lost. And I loved seeing that those kind of dynamics. And I think it's cool that it was not only recorded for the video, but it was featured in Time magazine as well.
Yeah.
So we got some footage from Time. And I think it was nice to see that kind of peek into what really happened. And here's going to be my music geek coming out. It reminded me of stuff like when we went to sectionals, which I know people make fun of that all the time, but it was a real thing. Regional sectionals.
Yeah.
When we went to those things, there was always one song where all of the people that made regionals or sectionals, even if it was you made it with a group, at the end, you would all sing one song together. And that was always a bonding moment where you got to meet other kids from other schools and to, hey, bond over something that was big for you. And it was almost like I hate to leave at the end of this. I'm exhausted, but I don't want to lose this feeling of community. And it reminded me of that because it looks like some of them didn't want to really end the night.
And
like
Diana Ross. Said that. I don't want this to end.
Yeah. So
how about you? Go ahead.
I really got it at the time and seeing the background stuff enforced that.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house. And my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once, new quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey folks, Stefan Shirazi and Renee Richardson here from the Metallica Report.
And we are proud members of the Pantheon podcast family, where the best of music and podcasts unite.
We've got something pretty cool for you. We're giving away an exclusive Metallica merch package worth over $250.
That's a whole lot of scary guys, skulls, M72, and other sought-after Metallica swag. And we've made it easy for you to win. Follow and share the Metallica Report, and you're in the game. Go to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica, enter your email, and hit that button to be entered to win.
And just like that, you're eligible for our monthly exclusive Metallica merch package.
And guess what, rockers? You can enter every month, so just do it. And while we love our global brothers and sisters, the lawyers won't let us ship outside the U.S.
How about you, Lou?
It always strikes me as amazing how they can pull together something that sounds so good when during the process of making it, it looks so disorganized.
Yeah.
You know, like people are like, what's my line? What am I doing? So that's always fascinating to me. And the technology at the time, they had to keep rewinding the tape to get to line it up so that they could record each properly within the context of the overall song. So
and how funny, right? That Huey Lewis, we're running out of time.
Yeah.
And the producer, okay, every time you ask us to redo that, it's 5 minutes, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So that was that aspect of it always strikes me. It's so odd and amazing that they can pull it together like that. The funniest bit was with Cyndi Lauper, with her necklace was causing a sound. But before they figured that out, they were like going through the studio trying to find thing what the issue was. And who was it? Was it, oh God, what's his name? The country western singer. He had a funny line.
Waylon Jennings?
No, oh. Kenny Rogers.
Kenny Rogers.
Yeah, he had a funny line. I don't remember exactly what it is. It says something about the mic or whatever.
Yeah.
That was pretty funny. And touching on a point you made earlier, like you're referencing Kim Carnes, it is always interesting because these really are time capsules of a lot of people assembled for these things are there because they've had a career, longevity, and they've built up a reputation that you can understand why they're there. But there's always going to be a couple of inclusions that are people that just happen to be hot at the time or for a time period, but they don't have the longevity of nearly anyone else. Think of I don't know if you guys watched the Tears Are Not Enough that I think I sent you. Like there's like Corey Hart. Do you guys know who he is? He's got song,
sure.
Sunglasses. I Wear My
Night.
Yeah. But that like he had one or two songs and then you never heard from him again. So when you see him again, it's oh shit, I remember that guy. But
yeah
so it's funny to see people like that in here.
Cyndi Lauper's, versus Anne Murray that has had a very long
and Gordon
career.
Lightfoot. Yeah. Cyndi Lauper's hair really stood out to me.
Yeah.
Boy, that must be very damaging to your hair, like that kind of bright colors like that.
Very 80s.
Yeah, very 80s. Yeah, and so it was just, I'm also curious, like how testy did things really become? Because they were there all night. So that's interesting as well. And it's such a different era. And it's part of the reason why I think a lot of things in general feel so bland and disposable because there's just too many fingers in the pie and it's too based on return on investment. And this was strictly a charitable event that while it might be easier to organize something like today, I don't know if it would be the same end result anymore because it's just everything's regimented and formalized and we're seeing it in all the media. Today's music, again, it's an age thing, but I think it's become very a wasteland generally. A lot of movies, TV shows are just recycling things that the bean counters think people want to see, and that's why you're seeing things flounder badly. Yeah. So to see something, and I'll just keep coming back to it, so something so organic like this, just maybe I've got that get off my lawn mentality, but it harkens back to an era where things, the creativity was given more greater free reign than it is today. That's and
on that vein, we don't have radio stations anymore essentially.
Yeah.
So it's streaming and stuff. So you picking up on something like this, you would have to almost make an effort to find it, or it would have to be in the news where before you only had the radio. You listened to it and you heard it because it was played all the time. So
yes,
accessibility is different too.
Yeah. And it was much easier to make something a true event. Whereas today stuff gets released and leaked all the time. So it's just a constant deluge and you're just overwhelmed with media nowadays. You can't nearly watch a fraction of what you really want to see anymore because there's just too much out there. You really have to pick and choose. And so something like this would probably get drowned out. And again, my prejudice, but I just don't think that there's the same level of recognition of musicians today as there was back then.
Yeah. One of the things that struck me is a couple of things. One, the local sports station I listened to, one of the guys, while he enjoyed the documentary, really crapped on some of the people that were in there, right? Like he did not think much of Kenny Rogers or other people. That,
Kenny Loggins, I could see an argument, but Kenny Rogers.
Yeah, and yeah, he said Kenny Loggins too. The yeah. Loggins, how king of the soundtracks. You? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Kenny Loggins. And they talked about, like, in Loggins and Messina, right?
Yep.
The other thing I thought is I'm looking here, people who did not have a solo, Dan Aykroyd, and they said part of the reason why Dan was there is for they thought there might need some humor.
Yep.
To mm-hmm. keep everyone up, and turned yep. out it wasn't needed.
Plus the Blues Brothers. He did have yeah. a career with singing yeah. as well.
Harry Belafonte, Lindsey Buckingham, a Mario Coppola, Johnny Cola, both of Huey Lewis and the News, Sheila E., Bob Geldof, which I did not, I realized I want to talk a minute about him setting the mood. Then Bill Gibson, Chris Hayes, and Sean Hooper, all of Huey Lewis and the News, Jackie Jackson, Latoya Jackson, Marlon Jackson, Randy Jackson, Tito Jackson, Waylon Jennings, Bette Midler, John Oates, Jeffrey Osborne, Anita June, and Ruth Pointer of the Pointer Sisters, Smokey Robinson. Of all those, the one that surprised me the most is Bette Midler and Smokey Robinson not getting a solo. But obviously, they talked about this. It was whose tone fit the most, and then you go, okay, who would have you left off? Okay, if you're going to put them, who would you have you left off? I do think, let's talk a little bit about Waylon Jennings
being
there,
goodness.
And then they got up, and by the way, we've all been this, where you're in a group, there's brainstorming, and everything's going off onto this thing, and we're losing focus on what we want to do. And right. Waylon Jennings, look, I'm a country boy. I'm not singing anything Swahili and leave. Any thoughts about, and then I thought Lionel Richie talked about that. What do you think is the worst thing to ask during this thing? You had to have Quincy Jones had to run things. Lou, Karen, either one of you, thoughts on any of that?
I was disappointed in Waylon Jennings, to be honest.
Yeah.
Is it racism? Is that what it was? I understand he didn't want to sing what they were saying, but he didn't even stick around. I feel like he was just, it was so abhorrent to him that he had to leave. And so it really disappoints me that happened.
Yeah, it did not make him look very good.
Yeah.
Lou, thoughts?
Yeah, you know, it's difficult enough to pull a collection of creatives together like this. And creatives tend to be type A personalities, right? Because they had to be that way to get where they are. So conflict, I think, is always inevitable. Look at Prince. He didn't even show up because he just can't stand being with other people, which is, in retrospect, it's really sad that he's not in there. But he just wanted to do a guitar solo too. It's, dude, it's not that kind of song.
Yeah.
That's inevitable. It's going to happen. I would have loved to have seen David Lee Roth in the mix, though. That would have
right.
been fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. But, and This special is obviously going to cast most people in a good light. They pick one or two. I would have liked to see them more of a fly in the wall kind of thing. I think the Peter Jackson thing for the Beatles, was it Let It Be? I think it was Let It Be. Or was it Abbey Road? I can't remember which album now. But that's that documentary, you got to see a lot more of the warts and
yeah.
all. And with this many people, obviously, 90 minutes is pretty hard to compress that experience
yeah.
into it, especially since you have to build up the context of where and when this was happening in that. I think that the Waylon Jennings thing is inevitable, given the type of environment and people involved. But for overall, it's still amazing that they pulled this many people together. It was just very fortuitous that the Music Awards was bringing a lot of them together again. With that, but that shows the kind of clever thinking you had to use back then to get people together in the same spot as well.
Yeah,
it was a good confluence of things happening.
Yeah,
that the people that were involved, Ken Cragen, who was an agent at the time, who, if you look him up, he did so much charitable work in his lifetime. Much more than just
and
this.
Harry Belafonte.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
That was nice to see him. And I love that Deo scene, right? Where they did that
yep.
kind of.
That was
that.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. It's remarkable that the creatives can get together and do stuff like this for charity. I had to laugh at the documentary cameraman. He had his invoice ready. Seriously, dude? Yeah. I laughed out loud when he said that.
He didn't even think about it, I think, until it was over.
Oh, we're doing this for free? Oh.
Oh, all right.
Dude, you're in a room with all these people. Isn't that a payment enough?
You got to see this historic event.
Yeah. And
I was also a little sad about the Sheila E. stuff because I feel like they treated her poorly.
One of the things that I know that I was a little offended by as a child of the 70s is Paul Simon's joke that if a bomb hits this place, John Denver's back in top.
Right. And come on. It was funny.
Yeah, but John Denver.
Very dark humor.
Yeah, John Denver had done a lot of work, similar to Harry Chapin, to work on World Hunger. And I remember Denver being interviewed that he was glad they did that work, but he would have loved for him to have been there. But his perception of being uncool, they didn't have him in there. And it just makes me a little sad. Yeah, it is.
Plus, we lost him not long after that.
Yeah.
Too, so,
I did want to spend a few minutes talking about Farslav. I thought Lionel was hilarious telling the story.
Is he? Maybe this is not appropriate. Snake. Did he have plastic surgery or something? Because his face looks weird.
To me, I thought
bad Botox.
I thought the same thing. I thought that it and. By the way, this is wrong for me to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. I often think that it never works out. Never, like, doing this just seems to never work out in the long run. Yeah. But, So, I do love the thing of the snake.
Yeah.
He wants to meet you. Weird.
And the idea
in the parrot and the dog and the other
room.
Yeah.
And I've seen this horror movie and it don't work well for the brother. It was one of
funny.
Yeah.
I laughed out loud at that joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen this movie and it does not work out well for the brother.
Well, then I loved the talking about, are we going to do an anthem? Are we going to do Rut? And hearing him talk about that. I am fascinated by the creative process of building a song. And one of the things you mentioned earlier, Lou, that I'm always amazed at is when a musician joins another musician on stage, and sometimes they rehearse and sometimes they don't, and they just figure it out.
Yeah.
There is a great example, and I will try to remember to include a link to it, but someone asked Bruce to do You Never Can Tell. And there is a video of him going through figuring out what key it is and telling the horns what to do. They do all of this to do a song that just they're doing impromptu. And it's one thing for the three of us to jump on and go, oh, we need you guys to talk about the original Star Trek. Okay, we could blub away. But believe it or not, people, we actually do a little bit of homework before we talk about a subject on the podcast. I loved the idea that let's see if we can get Bruce, obviously being a big Bruce guy. Then if we can get Bruce, let's see if we can get Dylan. And how that most of the people, there is a scene where Ken Cragen said he did have to tell John Denver, no, you can't come. And that was the toughest, he thought, because of all his other work. And let's talk a little bit about Sheila E. feeling used. Yeah, Karen, what you mentioned, yes, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I also liked that I was sad that she was treated so poorly by the organizers. I do feel like they used her to try and get Prince.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that the documentary actually interviewed her because I feel like that could have been something that they swept under the rug.
Yeah.
That they wouldn't have brought that up as a point. But I thought it was really important to show that side of things, that they did some things that are not great in order to try and make the single better.
Yeah.
And I feel bad because she was a solo artist at that time. And to feel like they're not bringing me here because I'm a solo artist, they're bringing me here to try and get Prince. Really, it made me feel very bad for her.
Yeah, and to say that, going, hey, I wish you could have been just a little more honest with me. Thoughts, Lou?
Just touching on the creative process, for me, one of the best stories I've heard is when George Harrison was writing something, and he couldn't finish the line, "Attracts Me," and John Lennon said, "Just say whatever comes into your mind. Attracts me like a cauliflower, and until you figure out what the line is going to be." So that's,
yeah,
I love that story. So that's the kind of thing that, yeah, that happens with that. But we have to remember that even though these people are artists, but they are also, this is their job. This is what they're being paid to do. I think, I can't remember who it is. Some actor said, people are amazed at, like, how can you do all those emotions? And he says, it's my job to do that. If I hire a plumber to come in, and to me, that the fact that he can, you know, find the problem, fix it and weld the pipes together, that's amazing, but that's his job. That's what he does. And acting is what I do. So this is what these people are paid to do, or this is how they earn their living. So while as non-creative people, we can marvel at it, on the other hand, this is what they do for a living. So it shouldn't really surprise us, but because it's so creative, it's just something that we find harder to comprehend.
Yeah, absolutely. Look at my notes here. The other thing that struck with me is I had heard the Cindy story about the rattling jewelry, right?
Mm-hmm.
But to actually see it, her, and she's quit laughing at me.
Yeah.
And then going to this, and so she takes off all this jewelry.
And nobody helps her. I'm like, oh, somebody help her.
Kim Carnes is just standing there looking at her.
Yeah.
And I love the idea that she kills that part.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I agree with you. Huey Lewis was very funny in both telling the story and also, okay, I'm having to do harmony at the last minute. You're just wanting to throw this in here. And that's way out of my range.
And his line where he said, yeah, I was off key on purpose. He's really trying to lighten the mood. And I love that about him. I think he killed it.
Oh, yes, I did too.
I think he did too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then the other thing, a couple, right, is Kenny Loggins was good. Okay, Bruce is Bruce. Okay, how do I follow that? I'm going to go for a more soulful thought.
Flip it.
Yeah.
I love that the artists were doing an interpretation, being themselves, but also feeling out what would work well right there in the song. I thought that was great.
Yeah. One of the funniest jokes was the blind leading the blind.
Oh, that was great.
When Ray Charles and Stevie Wonder, I know where the bathroom is. Come with me.
Yeah. I loved seeing that Stevie Wonder was, first of all, that Stevie Wonder, they wanted to get him involved in writing the song, and he slipped through their fingers there. And then he said, why didn't you call me? And they're like, we did call you, Stevie. But him being a catalyst in the room as well, playing the piano, helping people feel out what was going on. And that huge thing with him and Dylan, I thought that was great.
One, I would love to hear that acoustical version of just Stevie playing the song and everyone trying to go through their parts.
So but, it would have been so amazing.
But the idea that Dylan knew enough to go to Stevie and said, okay, I need you to be me to figure out what I'm supposed to do here. And that the film of him, he looks uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right? Definitely.
Yeah.
You can almost feel
deer in the headlights.
Yeah. What am I supposed to do?
He's just not that kind of person to think of something on the fly. I think he writes a song and he sings it because he knows what goes into it, but this was not his material. So he's just standing there going, what do you want me to do?
And Penn Jillette tells the story that the premise, the idea was that Dylan's heart was broken. He opened the veins, blood on the tracks came out, fully formed, and it was a masterpiece. And then when you go to the Dylan archives, you see the dozens of notebooks of him working on every word on that seemed to just flow out fully formed.
Right. And he definitely did not have, they had no time to really prepare for this. So he was just lost. A deer in the headlights, like you said, he was lost. He was in the weeds.
And once again, I just think the idea that trusting Stevie, right? Because you would not picture Bob Dylan, Stevie Wonder hanging out, right? Nope. But the idea that, like, okay, you got to help me find this.
Or Bruce Springsteen and Kenny Loggins. Yeah. That's such a weird pair. Dionne Warwick and Willie Nelson. That was great. And they were getting along and making jokes with each other. I thought that was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. It
just
is.
Just seeing this. Kind of, they're so different. You would never think of them together, but music brings them. They are instant friends because of this thing they have in common. It was so great.
And then I had never thought about the, as they called it, the serious Phil, where we're going to have Bruce and Dylan and Ray do the encore back and forth, the this thing back and forth, and to film it. And of course, me loving Bruce, him going, so I'm officially on vacation now, right? Because he had just finished the tour and he flew in just to help that is just pretty cool.
I agree.
Yeah. I was trying to see if there's any other stories that I really loved. Idea of how quickly this came together. And to your point, Lou, how successful it was, how it came across that this did, it came up as a great song. And made millions of dollars, which did lead to Live Aid and all this other stuff. The Canadian response and others just makes for a really wonderful night. And the documentary showing you the behind the scenes of how you made the sausage is pretty fun. Yeah. Any other thoughts that we should mention, Lou, on this that we haven't discussed?
As an outsider, it really drives the point home again that Americans are very good at promotion, better than any country in the world. You mentioned off the top that you could argue that We Are the World is not the, or do they believe
do they know it's Christmas?
Christmas is the better song. I think it is. I'm also partial to the Canadian song, Tears Are Not Enough. I think it's a really good song too. So
I do too.
But promotion wise, the U.S. kills it, and they know how to sell their products better than any other country in the world. So as an outsider, that's my one takeaway that I don't think either you might have considered.
No, it's very true.
Yeah,
that is the standout. Although, do you know It's Christmas is on my Christmas mix. When I get to Christmas time, it's All I Want for Christmas is on there like 100 times, and then interspersed are a bunch of other songs, and Do They Know It's Christmas as well.
Yeah, and I've actually enjoyed there's been a couple. I think why am I drawing a blank on the Big Bang Theory band that does that?
Oh
yeah, the Bare Naked Ladies did a version of it, which I loved.
Yeah
I think it's a better song, but I think this is a good song, and I loved hearing them do this. And I go back to, it was so much fun watching the video and trying to pick out who these were, because back then, I'm going to sound like the old guy, like right now, I just popped up a search browser, I went to Wikipedia, and there's a list of everyone that's in the chorus.
Yep.
You couldn't do that in 85.
And it wasn't like they like were static on the group. They like panned across.
Yeah.
And so you'd have to pause it on the VCR and try to see who they were. I know that was so interesting to me. And also I giggled that Dan Aykroyd was there at the time, but I get why they asked him to be there.
Yeah.
The Pointer Sisters. I would have liked to see more background on some of the people we didn't get to see. Like I said, the Pointer Sisters were there, and there were quite a few other people that were there.
Lindsey Buckingham from Fleetwood Mac. Yeah. Like, that's pretty cool.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we did mention at the top about Bob Geldof, how he came in and they were all joking around. They were procrastinating. And he came in and he gave the talk about how serious this was. And immediately they were snapped into action at that point. And I think that really says something about Bob Geldof. No matter what you think of him, I like him fine, but I know there are people who are not fans of him. I think he's done a lot of good in his life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And him being there to support, even though he had this other recording for a similar thing, to have him come and support them as well, like at the last minute. He was not at that award ceremony, as far as I know. He came in and decided he was going to be part of it. So I think that's great. And we've said throughout that it must have been incredibly difficult to organize this whole thing, to send out the tapes. It was at the last minute where they sang like a demo of it and they sent the tape out to everyone. There's no email where you can attach an MP3 back then. It was a physical tape that they had to get. Bruce was on tour still. He hadn't even finished his tour. How did they get him that demo?
Yeah.
And there's no cell phones to call people on. So they had to go through agents and all this other stuff. The logistics of it had to be. And I feel like they didn't focus on that enough.
Well,
but I get why they left some of the stuff out, but it's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah. And the idea that there was a lot of genius. There's no, just the artist, right? That we have, because it would have been so busy if you'd had your managers or your entourage there. And how, and I did love the idea, and I can't remember who it was, but someone broke the ice, right? Someone went up to and said, "I'm such a big fan. Would you mind signing my sheet?"
I think that was Diana Ross again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Went to Kenny Rogers or something. Yeah. Someone so completely different than her.
Yeah.
I think Willie Nelson.
Or who was it? Okay. Willie Nelson.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden now then they're all.
And they were all doing it. Yeah.
I think that's. And
those would be worth a lot of money nowadays.
Yeah. What a really special moment. And
in the picture that's behind Lou right now, which is like a picture of them singing the chorus. Yeah. You can see that some of them have that USA for Africa sweatshirt.
Yeah.
And there are so many of those sweatshirts where everyone signed the back of them.
Yeah.
And that would be amazing to just walk around and have people sign your back.
Yeah.
So incredible.
Yeah. And the idea that it is hard to imagine that one night, right? Everyone there and you stayed up all night and you knew that, and you felt like you've captured that magic. So very cool. I just was really impressed with the documentary. I thought that the people they interviewed, Cindy, I really have always admired. I thought she came across great. I thought Huey Lewis and Lionel and then,
you know,
Kenny. And then of course, Bruce is just really, and the idea of his voice is trash after all this thing.
Yeah,
and,
dude. He was crazy good on this.
Yeah, it just, it is, as Lou talked about, it is a time capsule of musicians that are popular at that time. And when you throw out that how many of them we still know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point, I have to admit, when I saw Corey Hart, I was thinking of the Coreys from film.
Yeah.
And going, why are they having
no different
actor,
dude?
Corey? Yes, I was saying.
Yeah.
I wear my sunglasses at night.
Yeah.
So well done. All right. Karen, any final thoughts?
Not that I know of. I just loved, like you said, I loved the people they interviewed. I think it was a smattering of different viewpoints.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool. And of course, Lionel Richie being the mastermind of the whole thing, along with Harry Belafonte. The fact that they met up, bumped heads and decided, hey, let's do something. And I think it was great to see Lionel Richie's insights as to what went on that night. And then it was very poignant at the end where he talks about, you can go home, but you can't go home. And he's sitting in that same studio and he says, it's not the same. It's those people aren't here.
There was Cindy.
Cindy was here and Bruce was over there. And it was really great to see that. And again, very poignant. It made me tear up a little bit to see how it impacted his life and how he felt at the time. And being back in that studio, how sentimental it made him say, that time will never come again. That was a different time.
And I thought it was very poignant of they had the at the end, they showed who was no longer with us.
Who had passed away, yeah.
And so many we have lost, which I thought was really, as you said, poignant and done.
I forgot that Al Jarreau passed away until I saw that. And I was like, really? I don't remember that.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I think the mortality rate between among creatives always seems to be higher than regular people. But
yeah,
I think when you burn that bright, and a lot of, I don't want to stereotype, but I think for a lot of creative people come from very fractured backgrounds, and that provides a lot of grist for the mill for them to fuel their passion as well. But there's, I feel there is a price to be paid for a lot of creatives, and that sort of comes with the territory.
And it's very draining on your life. That period of my life where singing was like the main focus, I wanted to go to school for that, but my parents nixed it. And then they sent my sister to school to be an operatic singer. Not that I'm holding that against them or anything.
Yes.
But yeah, it's really taxing on your body, your mind, because you're using everything. Like a job, you'd use your mind and maybe your hand to move a mouse. Right. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even in high school, we traveled up and down the East Coast several times. I know we had to travel to do that, like sectionals and regionals. And that's just, for me, not being a professional at it, but having a high school background of it. And if I had gone on to something else, I can't imagine how much that would have ramped up and what kind of toll that would take. And that was part of seeing Bruce Springsteen's side of things, where you see how draining it was, that it was important enough for him to be there, but it was right after he got off tour, and how he felt that. Just so great to see that kind of stuff in this. And I agree with you, Lou. I feel like creatives have a difficult road.
Yeah, it's a dual-edged sword.
They trade their life for like fame almost.
Yeah,
and not fame, but what they contribute to the world. And
yeah,
I agree. It was really sad to see all the people we've lost. And some of them very recently, like Tina Turner.
Yeah.
Was a little gutting for me. Yeah.
Absolutely. And to see Willie still hanging on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, that will be a sad
He was
day.
So great. Really so great in this.
Yeah.
And you can tell how laid back he is.
Yeah. It would have been fun to have him interviewed, I think.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, I would have loved that.
I realize you can't interview everyone, but that would have been interesting to hear.
I would have loved to see it as like a limited series with five or six episodes, because I think there's a lot more fodder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lou, how about you? Any final thoughts?
About this one, no. I'm just curious. I hope you don't mind if we divert a little bit to Tears Are Not Enough.
Please.
Because for you to, like, when you watch this, you must have said, who's this? Who's this? No? Do you recognize?
No, not at all.
Do you know who Dan Hill is?
Isn't that?
Yes, he's one of those one-hit wonders. He had a song, Sometimes When We Touch, The Honesty Is Too Much.
Yeah.
Sometimes when we touch. I know who he is now.
Yeah.
But that was also popular here. I could sing along with it when I watched it this morning. Yeah.
Do you know who Mike Reno is?
Yes, from Loverboy.
Oh, very good.
So Karen is doing better than I was. Okay. I knew. I'm always reminded that, Neil Young is Canadian.
Yeah.
Anne Murray's Canadian.
I love Anne Murray.
Gordon Lightfoot and Burton Cummings. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
The best story from that is Dave Foster, who is more of a composer than anything, and he's written a lot of songs for a lot of acts. But when Neil Young finished his line, he says, "Neil, you're out of tune." And Neil says, "Hey, man, that's my thing."
Yeah,
I thought that was hilarious. Anyhow, I just wanted to. I was just curious how many of them you were going, who the hell is this?
But during the first part, none at all. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know the French.
No, I.
Singers.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's a nice touch.
That was a nice touch, considering you guys are
bilingual.
Yeah, bilingual. Yeah. Which I thought was really nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Your country's bilingual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's
no,
it.
I was glad we shared that, and I thought it was a good song. I had forgotten till you sent the link, and I'm glad you did, because I was like, oh yeah, this is really good.
Mm-hmm. It was all over the radio here too at the same time. So
yeah, Geddy got in there.
It was great. That was good. Yeah. Oh yeah. Geddy Lee.
Yeah.
He had and I'm guessing he wasn't in the studio with them because he was on a green screen or
no, he was in there. They showed him in a chorus scene. So he was there. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was just great to see a lot of countries doing this kind of thing at the time.
Yeah.
So,
it would have been. Yeah, I think really nice. And I like the idea. Again, you sent us a link to Foster, how much he's done.
Yeah.
He's a pretty impressive guy.
Yeah. Agreed. And there's a documentary for this song too, but I didn't bother sending that because it's like an hour and a half or something as well. But
do you recommend it?
To be honest, I haven't watched it myself.
Okay. I didn't know if it was as good as this one. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it goes a little more into they spend a lot more time in Africa in that one than they do then in the studio. But
okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, all right, cool.
If you're interested, I could send you the link. But
sure.
Good.
Okay, let's see if I can pick it up.
All right. So we are still debating on what's going to come next. We may take a couple of weeks off. It is Karen's turn to pick.
For JKL, our Babylon 5 will continue.
Yes, absolutely. We are continuing to do Babylon 5 as we go. I am at Jesse Jackson DFW on Twitter. We are going to release this on Set Lusting Bruce and JKL Media. Thank you guys for giving me another episode of Set Lusting Bruce that I don't have to record.
No,
on your
problem.
Way to 2000.
Yeah.
On your
exactly.
On your way,
way. Yes, indeed. So, Lou, if someone wants to reach you, how can they?
You can find me in the Great White North, or you can make it easier and just go to YouTube and look for Lou's Reviews, where you'll find our podcast for JKL. M Media, or no, not M, just JKL. I'm going to end that and add that in some reason. JKL Media, where we do one-offs like this one that we've just done now, and also have done limited series, just finished The Watchmen. We've done The English Devs. What else have we done that? I'm drawing a blank on what others. Station 11, which is an underrated series. I highly recommend that you check that one out. You can also find other podcasts that I do for writer interviews, as well as our Stephen King podcast. And on Twitter, you can find me at Lou W. Sitsma. That's SYTSMA.
And Karen?
I am at Eleveria, Alevria. On the various social medias, there's a link in my bio to a lot of other places, and one of them is to my blog, at which you can find a bunch of other links you might find interesting.
Good. And I want to thank Karen and Lou for letting us take this little detour, talking about, as Lou said, a time capsule of music. And as always, it's fun discussing anything with you two. Please go to wherever you get your podcast, like us, subscribe, give us some 5-star love, and we will be back in a week or two talking about something fun, I'm sure. But for now, thank you, Karen. Thank you, Lou. Thank you, listeners. Be safe, be kind, and we'll talk to you soon. Goodbye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks and goodbye.
We are the world.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.